Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Mike Cosentino over here, and we got between us Tom O'Halloran.
Who's our congressman from our district.
That's right. The nice guy from CD1. We dubbed him that last time he was in Cotton. It was just a week ago. He came and spoke to our Yavapai County Democrats-Cottonwood. Mr. Tom O'Halloran was there with his wonderful staff, and he answered some tough questions.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit. I think most people know you, Tom, but your background is a Chicago policeman, and you worked on as a commodities broker, which I worked in a bar in New York that was filled with commodities brokers on the Upper East Side. These guys were cowboys, the cowboys of finance. I mean, these guys were something else. So it's a wild business.
Well, it is. It's changed. It's gone to computers mostly.
Back when every guy was yelling
and screaming in a pit. But the good thing about it was an open outcry market, and people could see what was being done. Now you have everything's done behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, it's very hard for America to understand the complexity of the marketplace.
Wow. So you've been a congressman, and tell us a little bit, what's your take on the most important thing happening now in Washington? We want to talk about health care, we want to talk about education, but we've now have a process, which, of course, the House is not involved in, of a nominee for the Supreme Court. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, the president has the right to nominate anybody he wants. I think Congress has its responsibility to make sure that as we go through the confirmation process and the investigative process, that we do it in a thorough way to make sure that an appointment. I don't differentiate between a Democratic president and a Republican president making these appointments. We have to make sure that it's the correct individual, because these are potentially decades-long appointments.
The Senate sure makes a difference. Sees a difference between Democrat and Republican presidents.
Well, right now they do.
They do.
But they shouldn't.
They should.
This should be non-political. It should be something that goes along the lines of, an appropriate investigation, and then questions relating to the aspects of how the person has made decisions in the past, and going forward, how we as Americans can get a feel for how this justice is going to be working on the bench with others.
I'd like to ask you about, to some extent, about the economy and the ballooning deficit.
We listened for
10 years about Republicans being a balanced budget guys, and now they've blown the deficit out of the water, and it's going to get worse.
I want to frame it this way. Healthcare is doomed. We're going to have people without healthcare. We're going to have seniors. Medicare is doomed because of tax cuts. I think access is doomed because of tax cuts. In other words, I think the economy, let me go so far as to say, Mike Cosentino talking, or not Tom O'Halloran, the economy is doomed because of tax cuts. You can't cut off the revenue side of your budget. You go to work every day, you get a paycheck, or you have a business, and you have a revenue stream coming in. And you have a revenue stream going out. You have expenses. The government does the same thing. They have a revenue stream coming in the form of taxes. They have lots of expenses going out in the form of lots and lots of things. They want to keep the roads on and keep the utilities, all those good things going. Of course, in Arizona, we don't have a public utility, but that's another show. We do have one. So I think those things are doomed because Trump's tax cuts are creating, as Stephen Williamson just indicated, such huge deficits, and it's just going to get worse and worse until it is overbearing and the economy can't hold it up. I don't know what the time frame is. Let's start with health care, Tom. Is health care doomed?
Well, I think your tax cut issue is concerned. Nothing is doomed. It has to do with how we address these issues as we move forward. Take into account the tax cut. The first tax cut, we just had another one come out of the House, at least. It's not going anywhere in the Senate. But the first tax cut was sold to us as $1.5 trillion over 10 years, and that it was going to pay for itself.
Yeah,
and we've come to find out that after it passed, both the administration and Congressional Budget Office and others have clearly indicated that it's not going to pay for itself, and it's really $1.8 trillion. And then when you add interest on over 10 years, it's $2.3 trillion. So not being paid for itself. There's not a penny in the budget when this tax cut was made to pay for any of it. None. So what's happening now is when the administration just put out the skinny budget a few months ago, they had in the proposal to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security over a 10-year period by $1.8 trillion.
In other words, that's where the money is going to come from to pay for the tax cut.
That's where they're looking at it initially. Now, that's not going to go anywhere. There's nobody on either side of the aisle in numbers that are going to approve of that process.
So why did they do that?
You hear that, honey?
They're
not
going to
cut Social Security. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Why did they approach it that way? Because that's where they can get $1.8
trillion. That's where the big money's at.
Any of our listeners, Republican, Democrat, Independents, would want the basic safety net that protects people cut.
Paul Ryan does.
Well, we'd like it. I think they'd probably like it increased so that it's...
Wendy Rogers does.
Well, I know she doesn't think Social Security is constitutional.
Well, that's it.
The Department of Education should be cut by 15% a year.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I won't step on this.
I know you're on a roll today.
Yeah, he's all fired up.
I stepped on his line. You said something about Wendy Rogers. I want you to get it.
Well, she believes that Social Security is unconstitutional and should be phased out. And she also believes that the Department of Education should be eliminated by starving the beast and cutting 15% a year until it's gone. Now, the problem there is that who addresses the Pell Grants and the Title I funds for our K-12 and all these other issues? There is no plan. And so, if you're going to make these suggestions, then come up with a plan on how to address it.
Otherwise, they're just done for political purposes.
It's all political talk.
Why does the Republican Party now come up with such extreme candidates? I mean, I'm not going to call her a nutcase or anything, but her politics are really, really extreme. Why does seems like the most extreme candidate in their primary seemed to win? You were once a Republican, moderate Republican, back when there were moderate Republicans, I guess.
I think the first thing is they go through a primary system, and the people choose who they want to represent them in the general election. So it's not the party in general. It gets down to the voters, just like everything else. And they believed her message more than the messages of the other two candidates in the primary. Do I understand that message, that it's the best message for America? No. But here's where we're at, and hopefully as time goes by, we'll be able to overcome that process.
I can't believe Republicans would support those kind of ideas.
Well, I couldn't believe that we were willing to have a $2.3 trillion deficit added on after years and years and being told that the deficit in America is crushing us, and it is. And I couldn't believe that just the last week, or no, it would be 3 or 4 weeks ago now, that we had a situation where the last day before we left for the October break, which is, I want to talk about that in a second.
Sure.
That we really look back and go, there was another proposal and passed the floor of the House to have 800 and some billion more dollars in debt put onto the budget. So, and it's not that I haven't voted for spending, but I vote for spending you know, we can't do an infrastructure bill because we have no money. We have increased the military spending, and we've increased some of the safety net domestic spending because it's after 6 years of cuts and 17 years of war, these have profound impacts. But compared to what this other, I mean, we weren't running deficits like this for 3-4 years at a crack back just a little while ago. It took 3 or 4 years to build up this kind of a deficit, more than that actually.
And now jumped in a year.
Now we did it in 1 year.
1 year.
And I shouldn't say we. I didn't vote for it, and I had no problem with actually wanting to see how we could have a tax cut for the working people of America.
Right.
Not the large corporations that were flush with cash.
And
now they're overseas. They aren't bringing their businesses back from overseas. In fact, the tax bill makes it easier for them to stay overseas because their profits are not taxed anymore the way they were. And then the idea that they were going to reinvest into America, you know, I'm very grateful that we're having a tremendous economy right now. But the bottom line is at what cost, and there's no indicator yet that it's anything other than a gradual progression over the last 10 years,
yeah,
of increasing better economies after people want to call it the Great Recession. If that thing was worse than the Great Depression.
Yeah, that was
our credit
was terrible.
Markets are still not to where they need to be, and so. But here we are. We're sitting here.
So I understand, Tom, why you increase spending when the economy is in the doldrums.
Well,
why are we increasing spending when the economy is doing really well? And why are we giving all the money to the corporations and their owners who already have 90% of the money in the country anyway?
First of all, the tax cut was way too large based on our debt. The other situation is, if you're going to have this, get something out of it. If we're going to go in debt, get something out of it like infrastructure and jobs that are going to be there for that infrastructure and making sure that we're moving America along. Capital investment. Make sure that we have a way to understand that the impacts it's going to create on health care and Social Security and other items. Identify how education in this country is going to improve because we're in competition on a worldwide basis, and we cannot afford to fall further and further behind on our education throughout our country.
So instead of investing the money, Tom, they've taken the money and given it to the corporations who already have more money than they need anyway, and they, instead of doing a lot of investing, what they've done is giving the money to their stockholders. The other thing is, our very combative president in terms of international relations, these tariffs and stuff, he seems to think that when he puts a tariff on goods from China, that people in China pay the tariff, where actually it's us that pay the tariff, and it's undercutting the tax break that people got, isn't it?
Well, we pay it. I mean, and it does undercut any break they got in taxes, along with inflation, along with the fact that those numbers I talked about the tax cut before, were based on old evaluations, because interest rates are going up. As interest rates go up, the debt increases also. And so it's much more than $2.3 trillion now over 10 years because of the interest rate fluctuation. And it's just not, the bottom line though is that a lot of the burden shift that they want to do is, and we stopped it this time, last time around back in March, but they want to take like a community block grant, and say, okay, we're going to push that over onto the states now, and they're going to have to pay more, which means the taxpayer in that state pays more. Infrastructure bill that they put forward, the federal government would do 20%, and 80% would come from either a private industry, cities, towns, and counties.
Russia.
And well, I don't know about Russia. I didn't.
Okay, yeah, but I said that.
I think that the bottom line here is this shift is, okay, the federal government, who doesn't have enough money to address these issues, is now shifting the burden on the state government, and which means increased taxation on the state level, which I don't agree to. We send money to them to use efficiently. We don't send money to them to make bad decisions for the long-term benefit of the American people.
Didn't we get a promise, I think, from the fellow who's now president that he was going to invest in infrastructure? When we drive the roads and the bridges and so forth and so on, it's pretty easy to calculate we need major infrastructure spending. A lot of our systems are older because we were some of the first people to do them.
Well, we don't look into the future. We look at the today's crisis because of the deficit issues. So if we were to look into the future, we'd know before we made this tax cut that we had over $5 trillion of need just in infrastructure for our ports. And that's how we compete with the rest of the world.
I want to say that slowly. $5 trillion in need, in infrastructure need, ports, roads, bridges, airport, all these things that keep the economic engine of the United States, of the USA, humming and competitive. And so they had that need and then gave over a $2 trillion tax cut. They cut the revenue stream. This is insanity. Nobody runs anything this way. I want to bring up the name of Dick Foreman, CEO and president of the Arizona Business and Education Coalition. This is Tom O'Halloran's bailiwick, by the way. Education
environment,
healthcare. Yeah. Sorry, I knew I'd get it.
All those issues.
Education, environment. Thank you. Education, environment, and healthcare are Tom O'Halloran's bailiwick. Our representative at Congressional District 1. This is his thing. This is our guy in the House, and the House is the as far as it seems like the silent perpetrator. I mean, I realize you're one of 435. But and I'm going to pick on you, Tom.
Nothing new.
I like Tom. Nothing new.
He hates congressional.
But this is the.
I don't understand.
The House is the silent facilitator of this madman in the White House. The House of Representatives, according to the Constitution, runs controls on the White House. This is the checks and balances. This is the nothing. You have not clipped this guy's behavior. You just said he's been allowed. He didn't. The president doesn't do tax cuts. The House does tax cuts, right?
Exactly. We do the budget. That's one of. If we can't get a budget done, it's one of our primary responsibilities. And we aren't there just to act as a check and balance. We are a co-equal branch of government. And therefore, we shouldn't look to the administration, whatever administration it is, and say, what do you want us to do? We should say, here's what we believe is in the best interest of the American people, and put that on the president's desk, whoever that may be, and say, you have a choice, either veto it or make it into law.
Is the House doing that?
They haven't been. No, and they haven't been for a couple of decades now. They have not accepted their responsibility. We have a lot of discussion between a number of us right now on how does Congress get back its oversight. And I'm not talking about all these investigations. We are the media out there is so wrapped up into this investigation and that investigation that the American people aren't informed by their Congress on what the real priorities of our nation are and how we are going to address those priorities and how we differ from the administration, which is part of the ongoing process. But we cannot continue to go down this path of separating the American people. We have to, any leader, I don't care if it's a congressperson or a senator or a president or the coach on a football team, their job is to bring people together. You have to do that in a republic.
Well, in the media's defense, a little bit anyway, that if investigations are divisive, if they separate us, which they do, because that's the whole nature of investigation, at least an investigation tells the American tells the American people that Congress is doing something about it.
We don't have investigations. We have political sideshows.
They get
into a room and they start asking questions because there's a TV on, and they go crazy with these questions. And it's never about how do we find common ground on this issue. It's always about my position versus your position. That's why before we got on the air, we were talking about the problem solvers.
Yes. Tell us
about the problem.
Tell us what we don't know about the problem.
Well, and people don't know that it even exists.
That's true.
Yes, that's true. So we know about the Freedom Caucus, which was used to be the Tea Party Caucus, but we don't know.
Problem Solvers are a bipartisan group. 24 Republicans, 24 Democrats. Anybody can join as long as they bring somebody from the other party on board. We sit at a table every week and discuss some of the core issues of our country. And where we can find common ground, we do. Where we can't find common ground, we walk away and come back the next week as friends, work during the week with staff and others to try to push that process together a little bit more. Two examples. One. Health care. We found common ground on health care between Republicans and Democrats. And it had already left the House. Nobody wanted to do anything in the House with health care. So we got over to the Senate and the Senate Health Committee. They were using our proposal, our bipartisan proposal, as a framework in order to develop a bill on health care for America. The leadership in the Senate said, we're not going there. We don't want to address these issues. But, at least in a bipartisan way, the ranking member and the chair of that committee said, yes, let's work together, and Alexander Murray. So, and the second thing, we just came out with a, recognizing the problems that Congress is having, we just came out with a break the gridlock. And it's a program that says we need to find a way to get bills heard. And that there's 435 of us. No one person should be allowed to say that we're not going to hear that bill.
Yeah, that's preposterous.
No, it is. We had, if it's a bipartisan bill and there's 218 people on the bill, then it has to be heard in committee and it has to be brought onto the floor for a vote.
Are you telling me 218 would override Paul Ryan?
Yes.
218 would override Nancy?
Not only that, Pelosi. Whoever the speaker is.
To bring stuff to a vote even rather than having a vote suppressed. So you've got all these votes in favor of something and you can't even bring it up.
The Speaker of the House does not represent Congressional District 1.
That's right.
I do.
That's right.
My Congressional District 1 is different than Wisconsin's southern area.
Okay.
Or California and Napa Valley. Different. Totally different. And so what I need to make sure is that I have a voice for my constituents.
Well,
and when one person out of 435 can say, we're just not going to hear that, or one committee chair says, we're not going to hear that, for what reason other than politics? And that is not what our country is based on. Our forefathers didn't say one person in Congress should be able to do this. This is all rules made up by people of power brokers in Congress.
Yeah.
And it hurts the American people. It hurts transparency for our government. And it brings about this divisiveness within our country that's uncalled for. One of the reasons America is such a great country is that we're people that care about one another. And a leader should take advantage of that and bring people together.
So this may sound technical to folks, but Tom, this is important in terms of your voice being heard. We elect you. You should be able to have a voice in it. You shouldn't be overridden. You guys shouldn't be silenced by one person representing Dallas or whatever.
Understand, I'm on two committees, Armed Services Committee and Agriculture. We worked on the Farm Bill, but it was done behind closed doors. The committee never had time to discuss it until it came out. 3 days later, we voted on it.
By one party.
Why it was behind closed doors.
So the Republicans went behind closed doors. This is a committee that's supposed to work together to come up with a farm bill, right? Instead, they're going off in private and coming up with a farm bill, handing it to you and telling you have 3 days to decide whether to vote on it or how it should be modified.
And that's part of the problem with Congress. And as we know, and you can hear it on television, both parties do some of this power stuff.
That's right.
It's got to stop. It's not in the best interest of the American people. We're there to represent. I don't represent just the people that elected me. I represent those children that can't vote, and they need a good education for their future and our country's future. I represent the people that are disabled and are having real problems in our society. I represent the elderly. They're Republicans, they're Democrats, they're people that don't want to vote, and they're independents. and there are people that can't vote.
Go to a computer right now and take a look at Tom O'Halloran's district. It looks like this massive blob covering the eastern part of Arizona. I'm serious, folks. If you don't know what Tom O'Halloran represents as far as rural Arizona and communities, obviously, but you've got to see his district.
But it extends all the way down to the Tucson suburbs, right?
It goes into Tucson.
Yeah,
it goes Ina Road, and it's
Ina. Yeah, I'll be there on Tuesday.
Ina, Marana, Casa Grande, Maricopa, and into Chandler a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's all the eastern side of the state, from Tucson all the way up to Utah, and then it goes from New Mexico about a third of the way across, and then up in the north side, it goes from New Mexico all the way over to Kingman.
As far as I'm concerned, you've got to outline your district that you represent by casinos, okay, by the Indian casino. So from Casino del Sol to Talking Stick, I got it. But seriously, I just every time I look at Tom's district, and Bobby Tyler's running on service for Arizona. He's running for state house,
which is also large, but it's not as big as a congressional district.
Right. We want to
It's not even 10%.
Yeah. The congressional district is a monster, and it leads you to be traveling around all the time.
My point was that this man sitting here in the Chasm Studios represents a huge part of Arizona.
Half.
What do the rest of the people? What do the rest of the representatives do? We have nine, you talked about CD1 being different than
that's a good question, Mike.
What you to ask? It's also different than District 18 in District 8. It's also different than a Maricopa County district. Although at least it's Arizona. So Tom's job is so unique it takes a special man, I believe, to run a district like this, and it takes a special guy to be reelected. Although I have to admit, from this commentator, from Democratic perspective guy over here, who you did point out was on a roll this morning, that Wendy Rogers is making it pretty easy for you. Let's do away with so I want to see it. I mean, that's the best ad. This is O'Halloran's TV ad.
It's D-Trips.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Moderate Republicans and tried to encourage them to run, they say, we just can't get out of the primary. They just can't get out of the primary.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you're right about travel in the district. I've put on over 40,000 miles on the official side, not the campaign and official, just the official side of my going around the district.
That's over 1.5 times around the world, by the way.
Exactly.
I want to point that out.
And on the campaign side, you can put another 30,000 miles on there. So that's in a year and a half. And then you add on the fact that it's a diverse district. There's 12 tribal nations. I have the Copper Corridor. I have farming. I have ranching. I have timber industry, five national forests, the 20-some national parks or monuments. You can go on and on and on. The largest watershed Salt River project in the state. That we supply water to the metropolitan areas.
That's huge, by the way. All those Phoenix reservoirs, the reason those 4.5 million people exist in Yavapai County, all those wonderful reservoirs from the White Mountains that Tom represents feed water to that place. Go ahead.
And so the balancing is that if you take a look at the district, you have to address such a large amount of issues that in a smaller district, you just don't have that right. type of diversity of issues.
So how do you
this
manage
makes it
that?
Interesting. I love it.
It's great.
You know.
How do you manage it? Because there's a difference between people up in the Navajo reservation, what concerns them, what they want you to do, and people in say, down in Tucson or Chandler, the edges of very metropolitan areas.
It still gets down to people. If something's impacting constituents of mine, my job is to try to resolve their issue, whether it's constituent services which we have a multitude of members of our team here. We have 11 staffers in Arizona. Mostly.
And you don't care what people's political party is. They can come and talk to you. You represent everybody.
Our biggest issue are our veterans. You know, about 40-some percent of our cases are veterans' cases.
I want to say that, Tom. I've known you a while. And then when you said that at the Cottonwood meeting at the Red Rooster, it resonated. I was looking at the crowd when you said that. And what Steve just said, that you didn't care about whether you were in there or in their district, you know, because we have all those, you know, like the dividing line. Is Verde Santa Fe a part of it? Is Village of Oak Creek? You know, I mean, it's so border-ish here. We're on the border of one of his, not in the middle. And that was just, I don't want to make too big a deal out of it, but you saw people's shoulders go down. They were relieved a little bit. There was a guy from Washington talking about representative, and he completely threw off the fact whether they lived in his district. They were all worried about that district. And he said, well, it doesn't matter. You know, if we can help, we can help. I got these 11 guys, whatever they can do.
Yeah,
that was important.
We will send the case over to the local representative. If they don't work on it or they just choose not to for whatever reason, I'm not going to allow an American citizen not to have their voice.
How do you get along with the other representatives from Arizona, the Arizona delegation? Is there a unity there, or is it as divisive as national politics seems?
No, Arizona comes first. So the nine of us, if it's an Arizona issue and we need to work on it together, we do it. We put out a lot of letters together. We work on bills together. If it's a bill that I just can't sign on to because I think it's a radical bill or something that's not beneficial to my district, then, you know, I'm not going to fight it because it has to be somebody else in the state. But, you know, we have to find a way to do what we do in all the districts across all the states across the country. They come together when they need to for that state. We need to do that for the country. And it shouldn't matter. When we're fighting for business in Arizona and to bring business to Arizona, we want to make sure we can do that. It's beneficial to every citizen. When we want to make sure that we have a good water supply in Arizona, we need to work together. So these education. If we want to make sure that our educational system gets improved, we need to work on it both on a state level and a federal level to see how we can come together and allow our children to have the future that they deserve also. And the better their future is, the better our families are, and the better our families are, the better our nation is.
I brought up the name of Dick Foreman, CEO, president of the Arizona Business and Education Coalition, who says, I quoted him again, who said right here in Beaver Creek, you know what? I talk to CEOs every day. They don't want another tax cut. They want good schools. They're tired of telling people. You know, they're tired of interviewing guys, and they say, you know, my wife won't let me move here. You could offer me all the money you wanted. I can't move to your company because your schools stink. My wife won't let me bring my kids here. He said that's what they don't want to hear.
Well, there's a perception that we have bad schools. We don't have bad schools.
There is that perception.
The state of Arizona.
Exactly.
Our teachers do an outstanding job, and the people, you know, we have underfunded schools. But you take a look at what our teachers do. We're 49th as a state in funding, and yet on the ability to teach children, our children are 25, 24th in the country. What an outstanding feat that is for those teachers.
But
they shouldn't be. We could be in. We should have a goal of being in the top 10 if we're going to be competitive.
But if I was managing a company and CEO of a company, it would still worry me. The fact Arizona's educational reputation would worry me because I would worry that my best employees, my younger employees that have kids and stuff, wouldn't want to come to Arizona, despite how beautiful it is and how we're like one of the most desirable states in the union. It would worry me, Tom.
It's a gorgeous state, and it worries them because we have leaders out there that instead of saying, you know, how do we make these schools better? How do we retain our teachers? How do we make sure the maintenance of the school buildings are kept at the level they need to be? We have people out there just willing to fight the battle of our education is bad because our teachers are bad. Our teachers aren't bad. We can't retain them. We don't pay them enough. Other states steal them away. administration. I've dealt a lot with educational issues in this state. Everybody keeps saying, well, there's too much administration cost, too much administration. That's our janitors and people to do that's a whole myriad. It's not just the people that sit in the front office. And we cut it 5% when I was in an administration cost. And it's been cut since then. You know, where efficiencies can be gained, gain them. But you cannot look at it and say, these teachers can rotate out of here every 3 years and we're going to have a stable system for education.
No, so institutional member, I can go on and on. As a former teacher, as you know, I don't even think I got good till 10 or 12 years. I filled the role and I did my job.
You did get good at one point, Mike?
I do believe that I was.
His students loved him. I've got to say, I've met Mike's students, high school students, and they loved the guy and thought you were a great teacher.
As long as you didn't bring out the thumbscrews, they loved you. You know what I'm saying? So that was a pretty low bar there, quite frankly. But the idea is that I certainly appreciate the fact that you mentioned that teachers are in there every day doing incredible jobs with incredible discoveries. Students are learning every day, regardless of whatever position we're in, whatever. They are underfunded. I think the bottom line, what we're both saying, Dick Foreman for the Arizona Coalition of Business and Education. First of all, this having an organization like this where business and education come together to try to do the best for both, it underscores how business feels about education. We need educated folks. We need the schools to be funded. We need them to not have the perception. Perception is reality, as we know, folks. Of being terrible, as you face that young man or woman who's interviewing for that job that says, my wife won't let me move here, and you want to say, let me tell you about this program this teacher did at Phoenix Union the other day. It was brilliant. It was involving. The kids left with full of wonder and smarter than they came in. But... I can't tell you about that because your perception is
Tom,
suck.
We talked about education. We talked a little bit about health care. We talked about this weird tax cut to the wealthiest people in the country that ordinary people are going to see with the combination of interest rates going up if you try to buy a house or a car on the interest, and the tariffs is I think it's estimated about $900 a person. What do you see? You're running for office again for re-election. What do you see as the main issues, personally, Tom, that you want to address as a congressional representative?
Well, I want to get our country on the right path. It's obvious with all the issues out there right now that we're not working together as a society. We don't all have to believe the same. We all don't have to have the same values. But what we do all have to have is the ability to understand as Americans we have to work with one another, that we cannot continue to struggle through decade after decade of blaming somebody else for the issue. The people that we need to blame are the people that can't sit down at a table and work the issues out. I look at, and this is important because you take a look at major corporations in America, the ones that are successful especially, and businesses and small businesses. You know, if they have a problem, they work that problem out. Boards of directors all around this country, they don't agree when the problem is first put on the table before them, but they know if they don't work it out, it's not going to be good for their company. And if we as Americans don't work these problems out together and we don't address the issues that our country is facing and we refuse to discuss them because we'd rather argue with one another, then shame on us because we have to find a way to work together in this country. And that's what leadership is about, bringing people together in a common goal to make sure our country's better. And, you know, you can't look out there and say, our families are the nucleus of our country and our children's future is the most important and all this other stuff, and then say, well, let's just not solve these problems because they're too big, or down the road they'll be dealt with. Down the road they only get bigger. They only affect our children more. They affect our families more. You can't have a society where people become richer on the top end and the people that are working out there are struggling year after year after year at in real money when you factor in inflation and everything, they're making less. And you can't, that, we're a consumer oriented society. You know, if our company is going to be successful, we have to be a country that's successful also, all of us. And so let's take a look at this and say, why is this problem solver group working well together? Because we talk to one another, because we sit down and understand that you have a right to your opinion, Mike and Steve, and that means that I need to listen to you and then try to find a way that we can find common ground for now on the issues we can agree on and move forward.
This group of 48 members of the House that you meet with once a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And to bring somebody, you have to bring a Republican along with you if you want to be part of it. Say,
or a Republican has to bring a Democrat.
Okay,
yeah.
60 Minutes. Are you catching this? Bill Maher, 48 guys in the House called problem solvers. And maybe you want to cover some of that, CNN, instead of the crap that you do.
The Freedom Caucus, that's the only thing we hear about.
Well, speaking of crap, Kyrsten Sinema, here's the big question. Do you have any idea how I can get a Kyrsten Sinema lawn sign? You understand this is the big question.
There's one up in the offices.
I had a call the other day. I had a call the other day about some guy said, "You're the man to call for Kyrsten Sinema signs." I said, "Sir, all I can tell you is what I would tell everybody. You either got to make one or go online and buy one." But they have some at the Sedona office.
Here's the thing. Yeah, I'll talk about my opponent as far as our values as far as issues.
Yeah,
I'm not going to tear my fellow Arizonan apart.
Right.
And say that they're a bad person and all this other stuff. That's all secondary stuff. We need to talk about issues. We need to when we're getting elected. We're elected. We're asking people to vote for leaders.
Right.
And leaders don't tell false. We shouldn't look at our voters and our constituents and say, "I'm willing to lie to get into office."
What lie could I tell them that's big enough to really make them mad?
Exactly.
To vote for me and not him?
And you know, in your ordinary life, folks, if somebody is lying and you're trying to have a dialogue, that kind of breaks it down before you could even get going. It puts you in a difficult position if you don't think they're telling the truth. It's one thing if they have different values, right, Tom, or different ideas, but it's another thing
as Americans they're entitled to.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, when you have a whole paragraph and you take three or four words out of it, knowing that those words were a setup for what you really wanted to say, and you use those four words, when you know in your heart and know from your analysis that's not the position of that person. The position is the whole paragraph,
right?
Not four words in a paragraph.
Right. They took one of your predecessors, Ann Kirkpatrick's statement here on our radio show,
yes,
and they cut off the whole second half of it, and they used it as the major theme of their ad. Total distortion. Amazed. I was amazed at the willingness to lie quite that much. They just chopped the statement off. One thing I liked about Kyrsten Sinema is she put an ad on and she's got the rest of her statement, which is something Ann Kirkpatrick never did. Because otherwise, if that's the rule, that degrades the whole discussion. I do like the fact that you're talking about having some kind of dialogue. Because if you have a thing where each person goes in and states a position, and that's it, I mean, then nothing's really happened, right?
Except does a marriage work if the two people don't talk to one another? The answer is no. Does a business work if you say, "I'm not going to resolve these issues, no matter how my partner and I think or the board of directors"? The answer is no. And for the American people, the answer is if we have a Congress that consistently goes down this path, that it's more about political structure than it is about the American people and their priorities, then the answer is no, we're not going to move forward, need to move forward.
It's really that simplified, Tom. I mean, you talked about family, you talked about business, but there's lobbyists. You have pressure. You have all this other. So it seems like you live in a more sophisticated world than the rest of us.
And we do, and there are great people in Congress on both sides of the aisle. We have to bring them together.
Okay, folks, we've had Tom O'Halloran here with us today. This show and all our other shows are available on VVID.org. been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.